face in my league. Got a blockbuster on my way and a pickup up my sleeve. They call my team insane, say I'm the one to beat. So you better bring your A game and start playing, cause every single week another win for me.
Yo, commissioner, you can just pay me now. City win first place, then take a bow. Finish on top, I'ma set the standard. Don't believe me, you could check the standings. When I draft, I make smart selections. Got more sleepers than a narcoleptic. Meet your match, kid, my lineup's nasty. It's far-fetched, thinking you might catch me. No surprise, I'm taking...
Welcome to another episode of Beat the Shift on the Great Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for FriendsFantasyBenefits.com. Joining me, as always, are Ariel Cohen, who has fixed audio. Ariel, how you doing?
I'm great. I'm back from under the sea.
Hopefully people saw in the show notes that we had a little bit of audio issues, but you fixed it right after. So with the help of Reuven Guy, who's here as well. Reuven, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastically. We've got another great episode for you guys as well. We're going to be talking about the middle infield a little bit. And I want to remind everybody that you can give us a rate and review on iTunes. Really helps us out. We've gotten a ton of five-star reviews, a ton of them. And they really help us out. Busted us up into the top 15 of fantasy baseball podcasts on iTunes. So that has been really, really great. And another thing that's been really great was the amount of people who came out and supported the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational and Fantasy Cares by signing up for the Satellite Leagues. Filled up about 4 2/3 of a league, so I still have a few more spots. If you want to get into that, you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and then send a donation to thegreatfantasyinvitational@gmail.com via PayPal. And I'll get you in the league. First come, first serve. I only have a few spots left, but do that, and I'll get you in. Winners of those leagues, there'll be 5 of them, get into the 2020 Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, where we have over 300 people already accepted, with Friday being the last day people can sign up. So it has been pretty amazing, the turnout for the Invitational and for the Satellite Leagues. Through the Satellite Leagues and then people from the Invitational donating, we have raised over $2,000 for Fantasy Cares. So it's been pretty amazing, the response, and I just wanted to thank everybody who's been involved. All right, let's jump into our topic today, which is middle infielders. Ariel, what do you got for the strategy section today?
Well, just wanted to talk a little bit about the ATC projection system. If you don't know what it is, it's up on Fangraphs. You can go take a look, and it'll give you player projections for everyone in baseball. ATC is an aggregation model where it blends in multiple other projection systems. Now, a lot of people download maybe 5 different projection systems, and they take a weighted average. They take a straight average of them. I do a lot better than that. I take a weighted average, depending upon what statistic. I find that some projection models are better for stolen bases, some are better for batting average, and those consequently get more weight than others. If there's a projection system that just, you know, does a terrible job with playing time, why would I want to use them? So blending them in, just giving them the same weight, just doesn't make sense. So I spend a lot of time researching and running mathematical regression models using the past history to find the best fit of what models to use and how much of them. Also, what I do is some class of players are going to be different, get a different mix. Rookies, I have a much different mix that I find is better fit for rookies based on past history, injury bounce back players. So I do a lot of work mathematically to get a very accurate blend. So that gives me a leg up on the competition. So just wanted to throw that out there for everybody. Please check out the ATC projections. They really are very great way to use them. I wrote a couple months ago a comparison of how the ATC projection system performed against some other systems, and you can see that if you had used it last year, you would have rocked your fantasy baseball draft. So give it a check.
All right. I will definitely be using them this year for my Tout Wars League. I'm moving over to the NL this year, so I've already asked, pleaded with you, pleaded, begged, you'd run some NL numbers for me. So I'm looking forward to using those in that auction as well. So I highly recommend it. Definitely one of my favorite things to check out over on Fangraphs. Let's talk about some of the players that maybe your projection system are higher or lower on than some of the rest. Well, let's start with Robinson Cano. Cano's traded in the Edwin Diaz deal that sent prospects back over to Seattle. He's now with the Mets. What are your thoughts on Robinson Cano in New York?
So with Robinson Cano, I like to think of it in terms of risk and reward. You know, one is, what is Cano's player performance level? What is his skill level? And two, what is the risk associated with it? Cano is a former very consistent first-round player. I mean, it's hard to remember this, but just a couple of years ago, every year he was a first-round player. Last year, even when he came back after the steroid suspension, he hit .317 in the second half. His line drive rate has been ticking up in the last couple years. His strikeout rate is coming down. So his batting average is going to be solid. I think that his power isn't going to be like it used to be. His fly ball rate has been coming down. His homer to fly ball rate has been coming down. So I don't think you're going to get those 30 homer seasons anymore, but 20 homers should be doable. For me, his expected level is there. The only question is risk, and are people pricing it appropriately? So he came back. He had steroids, the suspension. He came back. He's also older. He's 36. But he's been very, very durable over the years. Which could be a good thing because he's durable, but maybe it's a bad thing because he's got a lot of mileage on him. So the question is, do we think the risk is worth it? I personally think that he's underpriced here. What are your thoughts, Ruben?
Well, with Robinson Cano, he is coming off a couple of injuries. He did fracture his fifth metacarpal around May last year, and that was right before he got suspended. He also had right knee surgery after the season, and he has a clean bill of health at this point. And, of course, he was suspended for the steroids. Now, when someone takes steroids, they get suspended, but they can't take the steroids out of them, which means that he still will have a little boost of steroids, whatever it may be. He is 36 years old, so that can come into play as well. But he seems to be healthy, and if he's healthy, he'll be just like he was before. However, the Mets doubled down on him, and they made sure to fill up the rest of their infield. So he will lose some playing time. Jed Lowry will fill in a little bit. They have Jeff McNeil that can play there. So he will lose a little playing time. But if he's healthy, there's no reason why he can't play at least another 150 games like he was doing in the past.
I would worry that he may have a hard time getting 150 games in, considering he's moving to the National League. There is no DH there. He isn't the best defensive player anymore at this point in his career. There are just guys going behind him that I like more. Guys on NFBC's ADP right now going behind him. Rougned Odor, Brian Dozier are both guys that I would target going right after him. I just can't imagine I'm going to end up with a lot of shares of a 36-year-old Robinson Cano.
But if he gives you, let's say, like 18 or 19 home runs in the season and bats a high 280 or 290, he's not going to be a drain on your average like a Dozier would be or like a Odor would be, and his power is almost comparable to them.
His power is, but he's got no speed. So I guess it's more roster construction at that point. I mean, Dozier and Odor are both guys who can steal double digit bases. So maybe if you need a little bit of bump in average, you go for a guy like Cano, and if you need the speed, you go for a guy like Odor or Dozier. I think it's also probably risk reward. A guy like Cano probably has a much, you know, we've seen the bottom drop out on guys like Odor and Dozier, but they obviously have a much higher upside. The 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide. The Fantasy Benefit is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market. With featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and Fangraphs, and many more, You will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit today. Let's talk about Jose Peraza. Ariel, what do you have for him?
So Jose Peraza is a guy that I think is Starling Marte light. He contributes in pretty much four categories, not RBIs, but he's a very solid contributor everywhere else. His walk rate has been up in the last couple of years. His strikeout rate has been going down. So I think his batting average is really legit. He hit 288 last year. I see no reason that he shouldn't hit above 280 this year. His ground ball rate is down. His fly ball rate is up. Last year he hit 14 homers. I think that there's power that's developing here. Now, his lineup has much improved since last year. So I think he's going to score a lot of runs. Look at what he did last year in the second half. He batted 304 with 10 homers. So I think he's coming to his own in power, and he's a perennial 20 stolen base guy. He has 30 stolen base upside. He's currently going at a discount. He's going in the seventh round. I think he's worth a little bit better value than that. So there's somebody that is right out there who can help you in a lot of categories. I'd very much consider them at that point in the draft.
What are your thoughts, Reuven, on Peraza?
Well, I think if you're looking for power, I think that's a stretch. I mean, he'll probably hit you maybe 8 to 10 home runs, I feel, for the season. But what he brings to the table is his speed. We have to remember, in 2013 in the minors, he stole 64 bases. In 2014, he stole 60 bases. So his main thing is speed. And if he can get on base and remain and keep that high contact level and strike out less like he has, he only struck out 75 times last year in 632 at-bats. And that's incredible for someone who needs to get on base. And that's exactly what he needs to continue to do.
Yeah, I have a hard time buying into Jose Peraza, the power hitter. That being said, I don't see any reason he can't get back to double-digit home runs, considering the gains and the kind of change in approach in terms of trying to lift the ball in the second half, because the fly ball rate, home run to fly ball rate, both went up, but not dramatically. It just seems like he made a little bit of a tweak in his swing. The thing that always worries me about guys like Jose Peraza is the fact that he does not walk. And when you're relying on stolen bases as your main asset and you're unwilling to take a walk, I mean, this is a guy who he doesn't swing that often, but when he does, he swings outside of the zone, which is a bit scary for me. So I don't know that his 288 average is maybe as safe as Ariel does. I think you could easily see him kind of be one of those guys that averages bounce around, you know, maybe not to the same extreme as a Rougned Odor, but I definitely think you could see him, you know, be the kind of guy that every other year he's hitting 280 and every other year he's hitting 255.
So what's the difference? What's the difference between Peraza and a guy like Lorenzo Cain?
Lorenzo Cain's average is much safer.
Sure, but he also
and his role safer too, because one of the problems with the Reds is they have a lot of talent coming up. So what happens when they want to bring up Nick Senzel? Because Peraza is probably the odd man out in that situation.
I don't think he's the odd man out this year, because Senzel is still coming off of an injury this past year. So I wouldn't worry about that too much.
Senzel's coming up. He's coming up early. As long as he's healthy coming into the year, he's going to be healthy, and they're going to need to move people around. I don't think you can move Suarez off of third. You're not going to move Scooter Gennett off of second. So the only option in the infield, unless Senzel goes to play the outfield, which is, you know, is an option, is shortstop, where Senzel has taken some at-bats at the minor league level. I just think it becomes a muddied situation if he does struggle at some point. And when you don't walk, you leave yourself open to kind of those slumps throughout the season.
Sure. At the same token, if he has a great April, he's going to stick all year.
For sure.
And he has a very similar profile to, like, Lorenzo Cain, and he's going a couple rounds later.
Well, Lorenzo Cain walks, though. That's where I'm going to push back on you, because Lorenzo Cain had an 11.5% walk rate last year.
There's no date.
Three times.
There's no doubt that Cain is the superior player, but Cain is going roughly where he should be going. Peraza is going after where he can probably wind up. That's the only difference.
All right, let's talk about some later round target guys. We got Andrelton Simmons versus Jorge Polanco versus Marcus Semien. Reuven, what are your thoughts on these three guys?
Well, I'm always, for the past couple of years, I've been very hard on Marcus Semien because he's a very, very stable hitter. He's gone 15 home runs, 10 to 12 stolen bases every year. There was one year back in 2016 when he did hit 27. I think that was just an aberration. But he's a very steady player. He doesn't have to worry too much about anyone coming up behind him. His defense, he's not in there for his defense. But when you compare him to the other two players, you have Polanco, who also took steroids last year and was suspended 80 games. His numbers are very comparable to what Semien can do, except he has a higher power profile. And as for Andrelton Simmons, he also these are all very similar players. He has the highest possible batting average, I feel, but I think it's going to regress a little bit because I don't think he's a 292 hitter like he did last year. He's probably closer to a 280, 275, 275, 280 hitter. So if you're looking for a stabilizing person, Andrelton Simmons is the perfect guy.
Era, what are your thoughts?
So when you have three guys who are going at roughly the same round, who have a very similar profile, and who are all bargains by a couple of dollars. Andrelton Simmons, I have as a $12 value for a $6 auction equivalent buy. When you have three guys in the same round, I call it a hot spot. I don't know that when I get to that point in the draft or in an auction that any one of those players are going to be available, but I have a very good feeling that one of those players is going to be available. So for me, I pencil these three guys as a hotspot that I'm pretty sure I can get one of the people at the spot I want from here. It's a great way to, when you plan your draft or auction, to know that for middle infield, you can bank on the 14th round for where you get this middle infield, where you get a little bit of homers, a little bit of stolen bases, and some average. Now, my personal favorite from all the group here is Andrelton Simmons. Simmons is going to give you a dozen steals. He's going to have a pretty high batting average because he has a nice contact level. His profile is very similar year to year. When I look at the projections, I call him a very low variance guy because all the projections are pretty much agree on what he is. He is a five-category contributor. He will get you double-digit homer steals and high in everything else. He is a great guy that I call it many paths to value. Even if he, you know, has one thing higher, he can go one lower and still return a value. He's a teens value that he's going for $6. Polanco, same thing. I mean, right after he got suspended, he pretty much continued with what he's been doing. 288 average, six homers, seven steals in just half a season. Polanco is another guy that can fully contribute everything with a batting average that won't hurt you. Now, the thing with Polanco, though, is it really depends on where he bats. If right now Roster Resource is listing him as the leadoff batter, if you're the leadoff batter, you're going to get a lot more playing time and you're going to get a lot more opportunities to steal. So I would track with Polanco where he's going to bat in the lineup. But if he does bat first, he is going to be value for that volume you get. Semien, as Reuven said, is also a fantastic guy. He has the most power of all of them. he had 27 homers one year. I'm projecting him for 17 homers. Batting average not as great, but again, if you're okay with batting average and you want the rest of his profile, I think he's a great stabilization guy. And again, when you go into a draft, I wouldn't target any one player. I would say, here's my hotspot of Simmons, Polanco, Semien, and get one of these.
Well, I'm going to even enlarge your hotspot because this has been my strategy for shortstop this season is, if I don't get one of the top 5 to 6 shortstops, those being Lindor, Turner, Bregman, Machado, Baez, and Story, if I miss out on one of those guys that I consider my elite options, I'm waiting for this hotspot. And this hotspot for me includes a few more guys. So not only are we talking about Simeon, Simmons, and Polanco, but I'm going to throw in Paul DeJong, Willie Adames, and Garrett Hampson is 3 guys I like in this area as well. They're all going between 182.5 and 208.1 in terms of ADP on NFBC League since January 1st. So I love all of these guys. I went in length on one of the most recent Sleeper and Bust podcasts, like why am I going to draft, pay the price on a Carlos Correa or a Gleyber Torres or a Corey Seager when over 100 picks later, I'm getting one of these guys that can, you know, some of them can roughly do what those guys have done over the course of the last few years. So, you know, obviously they're not the true talent level of those players, but at the end of the day, production is production. And if I'm getting this kind of production 100 round or 100 picks later, I'm going to take it.
Sure. I mean, for why would you take a top shortstop when you can get the same price that top outfielder and drop down and get, you can get 3 of these guys. I mean, you can really put all of your middle infield, second, short, and middle. You can really get all of them from this round and get all your pitching and outfielders elsewhere. You don't have to get a top player. I mean, this is where the bargains and value is for middle infield. I don't know why it's like that. It's like that every year, but this just really shows up.
It really does, and I did it in my most recent NFBC Draft Champions League. I double-tapped from this group. I had missed out on all the other shortstops, and I just waited and waited and waited. And then I took Paul DeJong, and I think it was Marcus Simeon in this, you know, back-to-back because I had the end pick. So, and I felt really good about it at the end that I was able to fill up my pitching and, you know, kind of load up on a few outfielders and then still walk away with 2 shortstops that I really liked. So,
and these shorts that we're talking about, they're all consistent. They've been doing this already for 3-4 years, so you're not worried about a drop off. They're still young. I mean, there is a chance that they can jump up a little bit, but you know you're getting the consistency.
Yep. Let's talk about a couple end game guys. Starlin Castro versus Asdrubal Cabrera, Ariel.
All right. So Starlin Castro, he's not my favorite guy here. I mentioned him only because he comes out as a bargain. The last 3 years in a row, he's earned $8-$9. I have him projected at as a $6 player. He's going for $1. He's a guy, he strikes out a little bit too much. He has a high xBABIP, so you know, his batting average will have a nice floor, but he does strike out a lot. His lineup is dreadful. I worry, though, that his run production, runs and RBIs will be low. So he's a guy that he's a volume play. I mean, he gets over 600 plate appearances most years. But remember, guys like this, call it like Nick Markakis last year. Markakis was just a nobody, blah kind of player, but look what he jumped up to, and you know he played every game last season. He's a guy that you know just is there for the volume, although I'm not that high on him. Asdrubal Cabrera is very similar, and he's going at a similar place to Castro. Asdrubal Cabrera will obviously give you more power. He's hit 14 homers for the past 8 years in a row. He's very, very stable. Cabrera's value is actually in run production. He's had 60 runs, 70 RBIs past couple of years. He's a guy that can really knock and run the run production categories, which sometimes people forget about. And he'll get playing time because I don't see anybody else playing third base in Texas, really. We mentioned Patrick Wisdom on the last pod, but, I mean, Cabrera is there to play third, and he has the middle infield eligibility.
That's the biggest thing. That is, I think Asdrubal has that middle infield. He can play third. He can play anywhere in the infield. And that gives him a little bit more value to me than even Starlin Castro. Asdrubal, you know what you're getting with him, except his lineup is not that great. I believe he's either coming – he signed with the Rangers, and already he's like the second or third leading WAR guy from last year on the Rangers. So they don't have a great lineup, but the Marlins lineup is going to be absolutely dreadful. And I wouldn't be surprised if they try to trade Castro mid-year. So that may be something to look for as well.
Yeah, they if fantasy owners want a little bit of boost in production from Starlin Castro, he's going to need them to trade him. So because he's really hurt by that home park, and it's And that lineup is just atrocious around him, like you said. So until I feel like Castro is going to be moved, and I haven't heard any rumors to that effect yet. I think they're still kind of focused on Jeetyl Muto. I'm probably punting Starlin Castro in most formats, even though I've liked him a lot in the past. Cabrera, though, I'm on board with you guys. I think Cabrera is a really nice draft value towards the middle later rounds of your draft, depending on how deep you're going in your league. He's a guy who just continues to produce, and he is going to bat in a pretty decent lineup in Texas. I know Texas is a bad team, but that has a lot to do with their pitching staff and not as much to do with their offense. I think their offense is going to be just fine, and so I would not be surprised to see him have another 20 home run, 80 RBI type of season with a decent average, and that's one of those guys that is a great endgame filler for you in your 12 and 15 team leagues. All right, why don't we talk real quickly about Ketel Marte?
Ketel Marte, he's going just a shade below later than the other middle infielders that we mentioned. I'm not the biggest Ketel Marte fan, but he comes up once again as a couple-dollar bargain. His power is on the rise. I see that his homer to fly ball has been up. I think he is a guy that could bat 270. He had a bunch of low BABIP years for him the last couple years. So he's a guy that can produce a lot of value, and he's supposed to play as a regular center fielder. One thing I'll caution with him, though, is he has a very bad platoon split problem. He's a lot better versus left-hand pitching. Now, the Diamondbacks do have Jared Dyson there, so I can envision him platooning a little bit or getting some days off. So he comes up as a small bargain, and he does have the ability to contribute, although I'm not the highest guy on him.
And I think he's very comparable to what Starlin Castro can give you. He'll give you maybe 14, 15 homers. He'll steal maybe 5-7 bases. He has a steady 260 average. But in the minors, for three straight years in the minors, he actually stole 20-plus bases. So that's not out of the realm of possibility. He still has that upside. He is only 25, and he's going to get the playing time, whether it's in center field, whether it's at shortstop. He will get his playing time.
He will get his playing time. I just wish that he would translate the speed that he has into stolen bases. Because this guy was a guy who was supposed to come up and be Starling Marte-esque, for lack of a better comp. Yeah. A guy who could hit double-digit home runs and steal 20 to 30 bases while delivering you a pretty decent average. And in spite of the fact that he gets on base, he walks at almost a double-digit rate. It was 11.4% in 2017, 9.3% last year. He, for some reason, does not steal bases, and I don't know if it's just a matter that he's not a very good base stealer, though. I mean, he was 6-for-7 last year. It doesn't make sense because he's near the top. He's in the 87th percentile of sprint speed. I don't understand why this guy doesn't steal at all. I don't know if this is a organizational issue, but this seems like a guy who would be able to steal 20 bases and really hasn't come close in the major leagues. He stole 11 in 2016 and then has pretty much just trended down since then.
I mean, go ahead, Ruben.
Well, I think he will try to steal more bases because I think he will be their leadoff man for the majority of the year, and they're going to try to probably push him to steal bases because there's really no one else in that lineup that can steal. Maybe Eduardo Escobar can steal you a couple of bases, but their speed is coming from him. That is it.
So stolen bases are something to track in spring training. Mm-hmm. Usually when you see a guy running in spring training, and they'll run like crazy in spring training to try it out, that's a good sign that he's going to steal. Ketel Marte is a guy that I would watch in spring training for attempts, just attempts. And if he's on board with doing that, he's going to try. And since he is fast, he'll steal. If he's not really stealing in spring training, I'd pass on him. And hopefully your draft is after some part of spring training.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's an organizational thing either. I just don't understand it because the Diamondbacks were 14th, or actually tied for 13th in the major leagues in stolen bases last year. So this isn't a team that doesn't run at all. But like Ruben mentioned, he is going to be the only guy probably that can push it on the base paths. And this is a team that's likely going to have to manufacture runs to score them. So maybe Ketel Marte is a guy that I have been kind of ignoring a little bit but should buy in a little bit more.
Right,
Ruben. Let's talk about some injuries. Give us some injury updates and expectations for notable middle infielders.
Okay, first we'll start off with Houston Astro trio. Altuve, Jose Altuve, had right knee surgery in November. He's expected to be ready for spring training, and he should be good to go because that knee did hamper him toward the end of the last season. Carlos Correa, this past, I think 2 weeks ago, told The Athletic that he's actually, his back is 100% and it's not bothering him and he feels awesome. Alex Bregman, who actually qualifies as a shortstop, had right elbow arthroscopic surgery in the middle of January, and as of 3 days ago, he has not yet begun hitting, so that's just something to watch for because his spring training may be delayed a little bit. Corey Seager had Tommy John surgery May 2018. He said earlier this month that he hopes to be available for the start of the season, but he used the words cautiously optimistic, so that's just something to watch for. Brian Dozier, he had a knee bone bruise at the end of last year. He's completely healed, good to go. Trevor Story, now this is very important. Trevor Story, He had elbow injuries at the end of September of last year, and they actually recommended him to do Tommy John surgery. So that's just something to keep an eye on. He's healthy now, but it's just something to keep in the back of your mind. Hernan Perez had wrist and hand surgery in the early offseason. He should be good to go, though. Luis Urias injured his hamstring, and he's 75%, but he should be 100% good to go for spring training. Didi Gregorius had Tommy John surgery mid-October. Expect him to come back probably sometime around August. Troy Tulowitzki missed all of last year due to the heel spurs. He expected to be healthy. That's why the Yankees signed him to play every day. Daniel Robertson had left thumb surgery in August 2018. He's expected to be ready to go. Wilmer Flores, who plays in Arizona now, he ended his season early last year due to arthritic knees. He's expected to be good to go and fighting for the second base spot. TJ Rivera from the Mets, also another middle infielder. He had Tommy John surgery back in September 2017, and he should be good to go for this year. Martin Prado also ended last year in the DL with an abdominal strain, but he's good to go. And lastly, Dustin Pedroia, he's still rehabbing his knee, and he's expected to be ready for spring training.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Reuven, why don't you remind people where you've reached and what you're working on?
Okay, well, you can reach me on Twitter at MLB Injury Guru, and I've been constantly updating my notes in your book, in the Fantasy Benefit. So I usually try to get updates every week or so keep an eye out for that.
Yep, the Fantasy Benefit, the 2019 draft guide, is doing really, really well. Really appreciate everybody's gone out and purchased that. If you'd like to purchase a copy, you can do so on Amazon for $7.99 for an ebook or $13.99 for a paperback. Or if you prefer, you can just email me, justinmasonfantasy@gmail.com, and I can send you a PDF. We update those, like Reuven said, all draft season. So I think I've already done 6 updates since we first launched it about 10 days ago. So hopefully people are really enjoying that. It's gotten a number of 5-star reviews on Amazon, so I think people are. Ariel, what do you got going on, and where can people reach you?
Well, you can reach me on Twitter. I've got a shorter Twitter handle than Sporer there. It's ATCNY. ATCNY. You can find my work on Fangraphs Rotographs. I have the ATC projections that are up there, and it's on every single player page. If you click a player, you can see all the projection systems, including my own. And you can check out some of my columns that I have on there.
And you can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can email me or the show, thegreatfantasyinvitational@gmail.com. Try to get into one of those last satellite spots. Only a few left, but it's all the money being raised for it is going to a really good cause. And we're really excited about how well we're doing so far. And then you can read all my stuff on Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, and Friends of Fantasy Benefits. And you can hear me on this podcast as well as the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball and Football podcast and the Sleeper in the Bus with Paul Sporer, Jason Collette, and Nick Pollock. That will wrap us up for this episode. For Ariel, Reuven, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
First place in my league. Got a blockbuster on my way and a pickup on my sleeve. They call my team insane, say I'm the one to beat. So you better bring your A game and start playing, cause every single week another win for me.
Yo, commissioner, you can just pay me now. City win first. first place, then take a bow. Finish on top, I'ma set the standard. Don't believe me, you could check the standings. When I draft, I'll make smart selections. Got more sleepers than a narcoleptic. Meet your match, kid, my lineup's nasty. It's far-fetched, thinking you might catch me. No surprise, I'm taking home the prize. Only time I rest is a playoff bye. Make amazing finds off the waiver wire. All day and night, better stay retired. See me in first, all proud and cozy. Bro, please, I can't even count my trophies. Bragging, even with my bats are slumping, I'ma pack a punch, stat track a junkie.
Part one, they don't wanna play. First place in my league. Got a blockbuster on my way, and a pickup on my sleeve. They call my team insane. Say I'm the one to beat, so you better bring